afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for waiting. Welcome to the semi-annual update Nuance Mid-Cap Value Composite call. All lines have been placed on listen-only mode, and the floor will be open for your questions and comments following the presentation. Without further ado, it is my pleasure to turn the floor over to your host, Mr. Paul Gillespie. Mr. Gillespie, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Laura. Good afternoon, everyone. I want to thank you all for joining our semi-annual update for Nuance Midcap Value. My name is Paul Gillespie, and I'm the client portfolio manager at Nuance Investments. Before we get started, I need to let you know that this presentation may include statements regarding the intent, belief, or current expectations of our portfolio management team. Actual results may differ materially from such forward-looking statements due to a number of factors, including changes in general economic conditions, market liquidity, market volatility, and other market financial or governmental uncertainties. Today we'll be referring to a presentation during the conference call. A link to download that presentation was sent via email along with invitation to this call, but if you do not have it, you can email us at clients.services@nuanceinvestments.com, and we will send over the presentation as soon as possible. With that, I'll turn over the call to our President and Chief Investment Officer, Scott Moore. Scott?
Thank you, Paul, and good afternoon, everyone. As is our tradition on our semi-annual calls, I will give a brief team update, a firm-wide Nuance update, of course, always a process update, and then we will discuss, you know, the last 6 months or the first part of this year, as well as our going forward outlook. Regarding our team, you can turn to page 2 of the presentation book and see that there are no changes. Our investment staff is stable, experienced, and continues to analyze companies at what I believe is a very high level. Chad Baumler, my co-portfolio manager, enters his second year with the firm and is doing an outstanding job. Adam West and Lori Kirby have been with us for many years now and continue their great work in the respective sectors and industries with, you know, obviously a continued emphasis on setting the competitive positions of these market share leaders and understanding the financial statements and the more normalized levels of earnings, cash flows, balance sheets, and valuations. From a firm perspective, first, our firm assets have grown substantially over the last 2 to 3 years and now stand at approximately $1.1 billion in our two products. For Midcap Value in particular, we've had nice growth this year off a much smaller base than our other product, but with multiple recommendations from some very nice firms, we've been pleased to see steady flows coming into our mutual fund and into our SMAs. Our team would also like to welcome Jenny McBee to the firm as an assistant client portfolio manager. Jenny is a CFA and brings outstanding institutional experience to the firm. She will be helping Paul Gillespie, our vice president and client portfolio manager, with all things related to our clients' needs. Lastly, we're excited that we'll be launching our third mutual fund at year-end. More details will be coming soon on that product. This is a product that many of you have heard me talk about, and it's been planned for many years and is the last of the products we anticipate that will be managed by this team. From a process perspective, as depicted on page 3 of the presentation, I'm certain that all of our clients would expect me to confirm that nothing has changed, nor do we anticipate anything changing as it relates to our time-tested process. And, of course, that is the message again for this period. As a reminder, we are searching for market share leading businesses with sustainable competitive positions. Typically, those companies are facing transitorily negative pressures that through a study of their financial statements, we've been able to dissect and understand what the nature of that under-earnings is, calculate a more normalized level of earnings and cash flows that gives us an idea of what the market itself and Wall Street in particular is missing as it relates to the more fair value that the individual company may have over time. The pressure from the negative or below average earnings period obviously results in valuation discounts, and that results in the valuation opportunity where we can limit downside potential, but still have significant upside potential over time. This has, over the years and in the intermediate and long term, we believe allowed for better than average downside protection, better than average upside potential, and of course, better than most of our peers' risk-adjusted returns, and we'll talk about those returns in a moment. As for our performance, I would like to break the periods into three sections, starting with the least relevant from our point of view, which would be the shortest term time horizon that we like to talk about, and then moving on to the most relevant period, which would be the longer term horizons. The data for that is on pages 4 and 5, and my first couple of comments will relate specifically to page 4. First, for the shortest period of time we like to discuss, which is year to date, our Nuance Midcap Value Composite is up 4.78% net of fees versus our primary benchmark, the Russell Midcap Value Index, up 0.4%. That is through 6/30, of course. I would note that we've given some of that performance back in the last few weeks, but continue to be ahead of the benchmark nicely as we are sitting here in early August. As we have been writing in our monthly perspectives recently, and you can always go to our website to review those historically, back to the very, very first days of Nuance Investments, we think a more relevant shorter-term time period is 2 years. Obviously, it's still a shorter-term time horizon, but it just doesn't give our clients the volatility that you see in year-to-date or 12-month time horizons, which we think can give some really false signals as it relates to how you would be analyzing us as money managers over time. For that period, we're up 15.98% net of fees versus the Russell Midcap Value Index, again, our primary benchmark, up 15.07%, so reasonable outperformance over the two-year period. For what we believe is the most relevant time period to study our team and its value add over time, our since inception returns, which are now almost 7 years old, we are up 18.2% annualized in net of fees versus the Russell Midcap Value Index, up 16.9% annualized. And I would note that we've done that with significantly less risk than those benchmarks. You'll also see the secondary benchmarks that you might find interesting, the S&P 500 and the S&P Midcap Value Index as well. Lastly, on page 5, again, since inception versus our peers, you can see we have done very well over time, and we've been able to outperform our peers with significantly less risk over time. Against the Morningstar Midcap Value and Lipper Midcap Value peer groups, we are first percentile as measured by Sharpe ratio for both of those peer groups. And, of course, the Sharpe ratio is our preferred measure of risk-adjusted returns, and as our clients know, that's a very important measure for us over time. We want to certainly outperform our peers and our benchmarks, but that's not enough for us here at Nuance. As I said many times, we expect to do that with less risk over the long term. As for 2015, I would have you turn to page 6. As many of our clients will recall, during the months of December and January of this past year, we visited with most of you or had conference calls with really almost all of you and discussed what we believed were significant opportunities that we were seeing in both the energy sector as well as the banking industry. Both of those opportunities related to what we believe to be significant market dislocations, which, of course, we're always looking for here through our bottoms-up one-off stock reviews, in which we think we identify quite nicely by focusing on the company's individual fundamentals. The first dislocation, of course, relates to the energy sector. Because of near-trough oil and natural gas prices that were occurring, and, of course, occurring during what I believe is a latter stage part of the economic and valuation cycle, which, of course, is rare but not unprecedented, as we certainly saw what I would think of as well below trend oil and gas prices back in the late 90s during the latter part of an economic cycle as well. That period put significant pressure on all energy stocks, and we certainly have some opportunities that we were talking about at the beginning of the year. The other dislocation was related to interest rates. I've been writing about this a lot, so it shouldn't be new to our clients, specifically the 10-year Treasury yield hitting around 1.6 to 1.7% in January, drove another round of buying by the market participants for really all things interest sensitivity and dividend yield. Very high valuations thus resulted from utilities, real estate investment trust, consumer staples, and many healthcare stocks. So from our perspective, we were underweight those groups. But those low rates also hurt net interest margins and returns on capital for many high-quality regional banks and resulted in what we believe to be very attractive valuations for companies like BOK Financial, the ticker symbol BOKF, and Commerce Bank shares, ticker symbol CBSH, two very high-quality share-gaining commercial banks that we added to significantly in the latter stages of last year and early parts of the first quarter of this year. Since that time, oil prices, of course, have rallied from mid-40s up to the low to mid-60s by June 30th, which helped us as our positions in Franks International and Cameron International specifically contributed nicely to performance. By 6:30, we had actually reduced some of that exposure, but as we sit today, we are certainly still overweight and still like that opportunity, and we'll discuss that more in a moment. Likewise, long-term interest rates actually rose from 1.7% in January to about 2.3% to 2.4% by June 30th. This helped our BOKF and our CBSH outperform the market significantly despite just really a modest uptick in interest rates. It gives you a real sense of the volatility that some stocks have, even though their underlying fundamentals and underlying cash flows and earnings really are not that volatile. That volatility is something we embrace completely and provides our clients with opportunities. Without it, it would be very difficult to consistently outperform, so we embrace that volatility. BOKF, for example, went from the mid-50s to the low 70s on really that very small interest rate move and a little bit of a play in energy because 15% of their loan book relates to some energy companies. So a good example of a company we really like went to peak weightings around in the 50s, and the stock, with just a little bit of help from some macro factors, ended up getting back into the low 70s. We subsequently reduced the weighting a little bit for our clients as the risk-reward got a little bit worse, but we still obviously own it, and it's a top 10 holding. The biggest attribution winners for the first half of the year were Altera Corporation, following their buyout offer from Intel for $54 cash. We had bought that stock in the low to mid-30s, so obviously we were pretty excited about that particular buyout. We'd certainly identified Altera as a leading programmable semiconductor company, and we're really pleased, obviously, to get the private market multiple on top of what we thought it was worth. So a very nice addition to our performance and was one of our attribution winners. Franks International also was successful, BOK. Also, MKS Instruments, another technology company. Goldcorp, a name that while it really has had a poor year, we were able to reduce and sell the entire position earlier this year in the low 20s and made quite a bit of money in that stock. Cameron International and a packaging company called Avery Dennison. Again, you can see the diverse nature of the names that we were able to has some success in just the first 6 months of the year. Our largest negative contributor was our underweight in the healthcare space, really due to very expensive valuations. We're underweight that area, and we're just not finding the good risk-reward opportunities there. That space in the first 6 months was up almost 20%, and with our underweight, that obviously hurt our relative performance versus just a raw benchmark. But that's okay. That's what we do. At the valuation levels we're seeing, the risk rewards are actually quite negative in that space. So we continue to reduce our weighting in the healthcare space as we move through the summer. As for our portfolio going forward, I would have a couple of takeaways plus a summary and would refer you to page 7 of our presentation book for our current portfolio weightings and our top 10 holdings. First, I discussed energy before, and we continue to like energy. We reduced some of your weighting as oil rallied into the mid-60s, and we certainly saw the volatility of some of those stocks result in some very nice outperformance on some of those stocks like Franks International and Cameron International, as I mentioned before. We are actually now adding back what we reduced as oil prices here over the last few weeks have reverted after really almost peaking right around June 30th in the mid-60s to around $50 per barrel, largely on China's growth slowing, in my opinion. We continue to like Franks International in particular. They are the number one market share position player in the highly engineered tubular system business, ahead of number two player Weatherford. Franks has about 60% market share, and it's been stable for a very long time. Their issues are cyclical in nature, related to energy prices, of course, and they're earning below what we think are normal levels. The normal earnings for us are closer to $1.50 to $1.60 a share. This is a company with nearly $3 per share of cash on the balance sheet, so a large chunk of their under-earnings is actually underutilized cash, which is very low risk under-earnings. And with a 4% dividend yield, with that much cash on the balance sheet, we find the stock's risk-reward to be very compelling at today's prices. Some of you may notice they had guided down numbers today, not unlike many of their peers, so it didn't come as a big shock to us. I can't talk to you about what we did today, but I believe through my comments you get an idea of how much we like the company. And in general, as stocks weaken while we own it, the risk rewards of those stocks improve, and in general, we are adding on weakness. Again, I can't talk specifically about Frank's today because we're active. Also, I would note on the portfolio going forward, we are modestly reducing our bank exposure as stocks like BOKF and CBASH, CBSH have moved from undervalued to closer to fairly valued. Interest rates, of course, have risen modestly, as I mentioned. We still like the space, however, think there's more room to go there, but just not as much as we did. And then probably my last specific comment would be, you know, related to what we think of as always as company-specific stocks. We always are finding companies that due to their own specific transitorily negative issues for great market share leading businesses have opportunities being created in them. A couple of examples are H.B. Fuller, a name I've been talking to clients about really since late last year when we first got involved. The number two player in sealants and adhesives. The company is under-earning its potential due to excess spending related to a European acquisition as well as an SAP integration. At our normalized earnings, the stock is trading at about 12 times our normal earnings versus the market at roughly 18 to 19 times. And I remind yourselves that when I talk about the market, that is our internal market estimates of our approved list of very, very well-scrubbed normalized earnings. So we're very confident in that kind of market multiples that we see based on all the work that we've done. Another company-specific name, a name that we really started buying for the first time in a very long time in the first 6 months of this year, is Emerson Electric, ticker symbol is EMR. The company has always been one of my favorites. I have not owned it for a very long time due to over-earnings and some issues with some acquisitions they did, which I thought, frankly, they paid too much money for. Underlying that is a company that is the leading market share position business in process automation, compressors, application components for business purposes. The company's under-earning due to currency issues, energy spending, and the recent global industrial weakness, particularly that we're seeing in China. They reported a little bit light numbers this week as it relates to that. With our normal earnings for that business being closer to $4 per share, stock trading around 50, we have a very high quality company with an under-leveraged balance sheet trading at 13 times PE with a nearly 3.8% dividend yield while we wait on some of these transitory issues to resolve themselves. And lastly, I would mention Chubb Corporation, one of my favorite property and casualty insurance companies, a stock we bought in the second quarter as the stock price underperformance occurred due to expectations of pricing pressures in the property and casualty insurance business. Those pressures led to an attractive entry point for us for our mid-cap value product, a fantastic company, one that I've bought and sold and followed for years and years and years. I was clearly pleased that ACE decided to buy Chubb for stock and cash early in the third quarter. I would note that the numbers in front of you do not include the premium that we received for Chubb because it occurred after the 6:30 deadline. But obviously pretty pleased that happened. We bought the stock for you in the 90s, and we're pleased, of course, the stock now is in the mid to upper 120s on that deal with ACE. Lastly, a little bit more broad, if you look at the sector over and underweights, you can see, of course, we're overweight the very diverse industrial sector with stocks like Xylem Corporation, longtime favorite and a longtime holding of ours, still one of our favorites. The aforementioned Emerson Electric also being the two leaders there as two good examples in industrials that we like. Again, we're overweight the energy sector as described above and looking to add further on weakness. if we see good opportunities, and we think we might, but you don't know over the near term. I would also note our overweight in utilities is largely driven by a combination utility called National Fuel Gas. It's a company we like very much. That stock is a sum of the parts gem, in my opinion. It's underfollowed. It has a utility business, a very underappreciated potential MLP, natural gas pipeline business, which we think could allow for some significant valuation enhancement over the next 6 to 12 months, and an under-earning natural gas E&P segment with very low costs and very large acreage, and we think the company is just very misunderstood. So a lot of potential there for the company to potentially get bought out, valuation enhancement due to creating an MLP, or simply natural gas prices going back towards $4 and change per MCF, which is where we think it should be over the longer term. So lots of valuation potential at National Fuel Gas, ticker symbol NFG. Lastly, our underweight hinge on broad overvaluation and structural competitive issues in the consumer cyclical sector, as well as overvaluation simply in the healthcare, real estate investment trust, and information technology sectors. In sum, to conclude my remarks, while our internal valuation estimates for what, again, is our internal broad stock market suggest we are modestly overvalued on today's normalized earnings, we continue to find excellent businesses with excellent long-term risk rewards. Our internal data suggests a portfolio of franchises like Frank's International, Emerson Electric, Chubb, National Fuel Gas, et cetera, trading at a price to our normal earnings of around 14 times versus, you know, our approved list or our market of 18 to 19 times, and we're collecting around a 2.3% dividend yield while we wait on those stocks to revert to more normal returns on capital. And with that, I would conclude my remarks. I always want to thank our clients for their continued interest and support, and I would open it up for any questions anyone has.
Certainly. The floor is now open for questions. If you do have a question, please press the number 7 or the letter Q on your telephone keypad. Questions will be taken in the order they were received, and if at any point your question has been answered, you can press 7 or Q again to disable your request. Again, if you do have a question, please press the number 7 or letter Q on your telephone keypad. Our first question comes from Peter Quigley. Peter, please state your question.
Hi, Scott. Yeah, I think sometimes things are a little different, and I think in the energy patch, it's really starting to feel like there's going to be a hell of a lot of balance sheet destruction yet to come. How do you view that with the positions you have in your future, and also your future opportunities?
Yeah, I think Peter, thanks for the question, and I think that's a very valid point. And I think what we saw really over the last couple of years within the oil and natural gas space was kind of a bit of a drunken sailor mentality. We saw an awful lot of companies believe that the growth would never end, and that the North American spending in particular would continue into the future for a long time. There was a lot of companies using, you know, low-cost debt to spend an awful lot of capital, which created this supply disruption that we're going through. That supply disruption, frankly, to me, creates the opportunity for the well-financed, well-schooled, high returns on capital business with very sustainable market share. That's why we like a company like Frank's International. Number one market share position in that highly engineered tubular systems business, right ahead of Weatherford. They have net cash on the balance sheet of nearly $3 per share. I mean, this is a company that is just well-financed. There is nothing about the company that would suggest that even at trough earnings, which we study a lot, that they would have any sort of covenant issues, of course, because they have cash on the balance sheet. There will be no need for them to raise equity at trough levels, and I can tell you that what you cited is an issue. We're seeing it be an issue, and one of the biggest parts of our process is avoiding that very phenomenon. Companies with a lot of leverage going through the trough parts of their cycle are very prone to diluting the heck out of us during the trough periods, and a company like Frank's, a company like CAM, avoid that through having best-in-class balance sheets and still making money through the trough, and both of them very much should. So it's a great point. It's a great question. I would tell you it's not unique to prior energy cycles, for sure, except that I think some of us are, you know, the new landscape of North American oil and gas, I think we're seeing a few more of those leveraged companies bite the bullet than maybe what we saw kind of over time. But it's certainly not a new phenomenon, and our portfolio is designed to avoid those and capture the ones that don't have that phenomenon.
Okay. And going forward, there might be more opportunity in the space?
Absolutely. You know, any time that we think about, you know, a commodity-like business, there's a couple of things we like to do. First, you know, is the space losing share? Is it gaining share from a commodity perspective? So, for example, you won't see us buying coal. We think coal is a long-term market share loser within the sea of fuels that people use for anything and everything related to energy. We don't think of oil as a share gainer, but we think of it as a stable market share position commodity. So when you go through these cycles, that's when you can buy the best of breed companies at their most attractive valuations. You just need to look back even, I mean, really, it's amazing, just a year ago, and we had not necessarily peak valuations versus cycles, but we had oil at $110 a barrel. We had, you know, Schlumberger at, you know, $110 to $120 per share. Today it's closer to $80. Those type of high-quality companies, Franks, CAM, those companies are the ones that when you get these price dislocations due to closer to trough commodity prices, you know, we get those opportunities. So I absolutely think over, you know, over the next couple of years, you know, there's really a great risk-reward opportunity, you know, in the best-of-breed energy companies.
Thank you.
And at this time, if you do have a question, please press the number 7 or the letter Q on your telephone keypad. Mr. Gillespie, it appears we have no further questions at this time.
Great. Thanks, Laura. I want to thank everyone for their time today and let everyone know that, as always, the Nuance team is here to help. If there's any questions we can ever answer about the portfolio, we're happy to do so. Again, thanks for your time, and look forward to talking to you at the next call. Thank you.
Hey, thanks, everyone.
Conclude today's teleconference. We thank you for your participation. You may disconnect your line at this time.